Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Jonathan. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Doc?
I'm doing good. We'd like to welcome everyone to Our Black News. I'm actually multitasking on the computer, so if you hear my head turn like this or like that, I'm either answering a call or I am looking at the Facebook live stream to make sure we don't have any burps. Yeah, it's been a really interesting week here again in Minneapolis and St. Paul, the Twin Cities, the state of Minnesota for black folks in general, and there's a lot of things going on. But Jonathan, let's just dig right into this because I'm a little pissed off. I saw a meeting with Chief Rondo last night being live streamed by Al Flowers. I guess it was
right.
it was in North Minneapolis in a church. I have Chief Rondo's cell phone number in my cell, and I didn't get any notice of this meeting. Jonathan, he didn't know about it until I talked about it in the production meeting this morning.
Right, and you literally, like, you broke the news to me. I've been reaching out to Rondo for so long, and, you know, many of these meetings that are secret, like you said, they're secret. They're not really known to the community. You have to almost be pro-police. You can't be critical of them. And those are the meetings that those kind of make me afraid, because if you've been pro-police this whole time, and all of these injustices are happening within our community,
yeah,
when do you show that criticism to the police to get that change that we need? And like you said, Rondo has your number. Rondo has my number. I've reached out to him, emailed him multiple times prior to George Floyd. And now we're at this position where everybody now wants to have these meetings that we were already calling for long ago.
Yeah, and we're going to dive into the meeting thing because there's another piece to that, too. But, yeah, I was a little ticked off because those people, some of them never supported Rondo. And
never.
And his head is on the chopping block right now. I mean, I hate to say it, but I have to be honest.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I could see him reaching back to the community, but, you know, I mean, he reached back to folks that have, you know, except for a couple, never supported the police or him personally in that position at all whatsoever. So I was a little shocked and a little dismayed that, you know, they want to play this game of let's go back into the community meetings. But not to take anything away from that, man, there was like two meetings this week with Republican senators, candidates running for Hennepin County, commissioners, and they're going into the black community and asking, you know, a few select black conservatives that they identified what's needed, what's wanted. And I had some challenges. I went to the first one with the guy running for Hennepin County commissioner. When I found out and got there, it was a kumbaya information meeting. I just said, you know, I sung with him, kumbaya, my lord. I says, no. I want to play with the money where the white boys play, okay? I don't want to do the kumbaya, black kumbaya moment at all whatsoever, because that's some BS. So I left early. Now, there was a meeting on Wednesday at 12 to 2 p.m. at 1200 Plymouth Avenue at the old Workforce Center. This was with Senator Roger Chamberlain, Senator Mark Coran, a couple other senators, representatives from the state, and some members of the black community. And so this meeting happened, and I was going to go, and I thought about it. You know, I had a commitment to work because I had work meetings.
Right, and that's so crazy because we are seeing these meetings. I know you've probably seen down at with Jeff Hayden and everybody, the moment of silence down in the chambers at the Capitol.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you know, we're trying to figure out what does policing look like, the Democrats, the Republicans, they're coming up with solutions and stuff like this. But it's almost like a tug of war.
Yes.
To things that we already know which are right and wrong. And so as they do the same things that we've known them to do for the last 150 years within Minnesota, I think that the pressure, not only in the legislative branch, but also when we press forward and we're not only pushing on the judicial branch, I think many people will start adhering to some of the demands that we're bringing. And I think that people like Jeff Hayden and them, they're going to really sing a different tune now.
They get reelected.
if they get reelected, and right now, do you think they should be reelected? And these are the conversations that we need to have. Maybe, like you said, Rondo, he's on the chopping block as far as, we know what the system's going to do to Rondo. They're going to say, all the police left the city. You were in charge. I'm sorry, Rondo. And then they're going to get possibly like a white woman or another white man in this role, and then they'll take credit for all of the hard work that we have tried to do.
Yes,
whether
exactly.
Push out Jane Harkow and everybody else. So, you know, I think right now our representatives, our congressmen, our people in power are really trying to, like you say, sing the kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. Right.
Yes.
Because this pressure that I'm bringing, we're bringing, our Black News is bringing, Mornings with Mason is bringing, it's too real, it's too truthful, and it will keep continuing to make these people go from kumbaya to actual legislation and stuff like that.
Yeah, which is a great segue. Let's get in a little bit deeper. Our phone number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904 if you'd like to call in and join the conversation at all at any point in time. But, Jonathan, you know, continuing on that same vein, you know, I'm looking at this, and there's some metrics going on here that people are kind of missing, and I don't know why, because a lot of folks, I understand social justice. You're out on the street. Yeah, you want social justice. Okay, you want the police force to act right. You want the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights to act right. You want the St. Paul Police Force, their civil rights. You want the system.
Just the expectations of their job and duty.
Yeah, you want the systems within the systems to be beneficial, not just for you, but for everybody. Because if it works for everybody, everybody's cool, right? But the thing is, we have to take a step back, especially Black Minnesotans. You have to take a step back, and you have to look at what is racism. Okay, the question, what is racism? You have a lot of people pushing that narrative. Oh, no, we have this going on. We have that going on. And it's so unreal because it's not social justice that we want at this particular time. It's economic justice. If we have economic justice, social justice. Jonathan, if you and I are both making $300,000 to $500,000 a year, we create our own social circles with like-minded people or even people that oppose that we just kick it with. The social part is built by us as individuals, right? So the economic piece, the economic piece is way more important than the social justice piece. But I understand you have a lot of kids out there who have never read Invisible Man. They've never read anything by Baldwin, Langston Hughes. They've never read Bell Hooks, Pablo Fierro. They've never read any of that. So they're out there off ethos, their emotion.
And you hit the major part, Don. They've only heard of people like Martin Luther King. So when they are going back into these ways of trying to create change, they want to simply only protest or, you know, hoot and holler at just the intermediate or just the beginning stages of what does actual change look like. And then that goes into the other part of we start with social justice that all humans should really start with the empathetic feelings and stuff. But then that transitions into economic justice. And what does that look like? Do we do boycotts? Remember, Martin Luther King, he said, screw getting beat up and the nonviolent. Yeah, I'm not going to let you beat up sides of my head. We have to actually start knowing our constitutional rights, whether it's the Second Constitution, Second Amendment,
yeah.
The right to bear arms, or creating business, creating these social networks where there's capital gain within this capitalistic system. And that's where the power of change can really come, because we see the NFL, NBA, all these people reaching out to me and reaching out to people like you and saying, look, okay, you guys been 100% right. Your message is 100% great. Let us throw you some money, okay?
Yeah.
But they want to just capitalize basically off of our culture and all that. And now there's a time where our intellectual fortitude is here and we're saying, hold on. We have our Black News. We have our own media sites.
Yes.
You guys actually have to come to the table and work with us on a 90-10 type of deal. You get 10% and we get 90%.
Thank you.
And then that's when the table changed.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely correct. And it's really funny. We were talking about the kids for a moment. Our education system needs to be throttled and reset, because the kids, they know about what? Malcolm X, Martin Luther King. They might know about Huey Newton. They might know about W.E.B. Du Bois, but that's it. So
Maybe Harriet Tubman.
Yeah, the Underground Railroad. You know, I actually had another educator to come up to me and ask me last year, and it's a true story. I'm not kidding. You're gonna get a kick out of this. I know you will, Jonathan. Educator comes up to me last year and says, I did not know they had subways back then. I says, yeah, they had the bullet train. How do you think Chinese got the bullet train? I lost my rabbit ass mind laughing. Okay. And I mean, later on, this person found out and just was really like nutty about it. But our kids only have those frames of reference in education. So unless they look at The Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, unless they read chapter two in that book is a gold mine of roadmaps for what's happening to us today. And they haven't. So they have a thin lens. They're not looking at it in the broad lens. It's really not their fault. It's how the system has them right now. It's the evolution of Jim Crow.
And that's the crucial point, Don. We have to revamp the system of education, and we have to start with the kids. Even Adolf Hitler, remember when he was trying to kill all the people and he tried to get the people's mind wrapped around being able to do what the next phases are, he started then with the kids and children.
Yes.
And that's what the American oppressive regime, whether it's Democrat or Republican, and right now we've given all of our votes to the Democratic Party. So right now, to me, if we've been there for so long and we're still oppressed, that means they're working in the frame of oppression, and they haven't given us the tools or the assets to get up out of this rut, or like they would say, pull us up by our own bootstraps. Because if they did, they would be teaching our kids. Because remember, many of these Democratic policies are ran, and the liberal ideas are ran within our educational system. So they're actually, they have the knowledge. Don't think that the Liberal Party isn't trying to be woke, but they're not implementing these type of educational assets for capitalism for us to not only progress as a people, but progress as a society. And so what happens is now when you turn the tables on the Democratic Party and say, hold on, we're going to hold you in the Republican Party accountable, and who's going to fight for us more? Who's going to put that capital in our pockets? And if you are, you're going to get our vote. And that's actually a big calling out to the Republican Party, the Green Party, or any other party to say, hey, guess what? We have the leverage of the Black vote to say, if you're willing to help us, are you listening? Because all we're trying to do is make things equal and more equitable for all people. Are you willing to help us and then get our voice out? And you know what? We're going to have to hold these people accountable, whether they're Democrat or Republicans, because we know that our things and our communities have not changed.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, because this election is more critical than I think any election in my lifetime, in our lifetime. And our local, I'm talking about Minnesota specific, the Twin Cities.
Yeah,
I'm not going to D.C. right now and dealing with that because that's a mess. But I'm talking about right here. We have to make sure that we put people in office. I don't care if it's a Democrat. I don't care if it's a Republican. But if they can't come through or if they have a history, which the ones in office now have a history. It's not a fluke. It's a trend. It's a history of not doing.
We can easily go back in their history. Like you said, they have a history. You have a record. Whether like Joe Biden, he has to understand that I can go back to mandatory candidacy, where, you know, like, and we don't have to talk presidential. But like you said, if it's, whether it's Keith Ellison, whether it's Jeff Hayden, we got it, or Raymond Dean, or Bobby Joe Champion. Well, it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, and we're going to hold your feet to the fire. And if you have a proven record to just vote in just because you want to take pictures and you're happy and you're just doing whatever's popular at the time, when we go back in the future and you just do a twice, we're going to hold your feet to the fire with your track record.
Yeah, exactly. And we do have some callers. Sorry about a little delay here, but it is 9:45, and we start taking calls. A caller, last 4-5-1-0-3. Go ahead. Caller, what's your question or comment? 5-1-0-3 is your last four. A caller, you can't hear you. You can call back. It sounds like a bad connection, but thanks for calling Our Black News. Our producers tell us, Jonathan, that this could possibly be Mr. M from his palatial estate in South Minneapolis. Mr. M, you're live on Our Black News. What do you have to say, dude?
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'm not at the palatial estate right now. I'm at Mobile Studio C. And the whereabouts unknown, I don't want to discuss my nocturnal events, as a gentleman told me once.
No.
But the reason, first thing I want to say, is I want to say something to Jonathan, like my grandfather would say. Make sure, young man, you get your rest. Take care of your family and come back strong, okay? I wanted to just give you that little message.
Yay!
And what we're going through now is total nonsense. I mean, the police, they drive in their car. It says right on the door, protect and serve. Just do that.
That's all you got to do. Just do that. I mean,
if we continue to put people in places that they don't belong in, we're doomed. I mean, if we continue to move these chess pieces in the wrong, we're doomed. I mean, Ben Carson, a neurosurgeon, head of housing and urban development. You know, I talked to a lawyer the other day about a probate thing I'm going through, and he said, well, I can't really deal with that. I said, well, you're a lawyer. He said, yeah, but a dentist is a doctor, too, and would you want him to do brain surgery? So he shut me up real quick. And so as long as we continue to put these people in places that they're unqualified, and I hate to say it, Don. Well, no, I don't hate to say it. It's truth. Right up to 45. Duck military service, which is a great education, questionable college grad, non-existent political experience, and this is why we have all this chaos. We've got to change the pieces. And one quick thing I want to say, because I have to get back to what I'm doing at Mobile Studio C here. But in 1966, four men got together and started the Bethany Community Center, okay? These four men included Harry Davis, Cecil Newman, Wayne Glanton of the Glanton Construction Company, and Matt Little, vice chairman of the Minneapolis NAACP. And they pulled together, those four men pulled together a group of 30 Southside citizens to meet for the first time in the basement of Sabathany Church. And they, their first order of business was to select a name for the center, and they chose Sabathany. They accepted it. The next steps, they chose a chairman, under the direction of the great Reverend Stanley King. So this can be done. We've already got a blueprint for this. If people just do what they say they're going to do, they started off this thing with this country, all men are created equal. But then they backtrack. Oh, but you guys are only 3/5. You guys, No, do what you say you're going to do, and we have to hold their feet to the fire. Otherwise, this stuff is going to come back. It's going to come back again. It's not going to go away until we fix it.
You're absolutely correct. And,
he's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And one thing I want to say to our listeners, and M will know this, he's not talking about the Sabathany, which is a school building that used to be Bryant Junior High. He's talking about the building across the street, the church.
Yeah.
Which was the Sabathany Church. And wasn't that Reverend Little there, if I'm not mistaken?
No, it was Reverend Stanley King. And
I mean, right after.
There was a couple of pastors
out of there, and I guess there was some chaos back in the day, but he left. But I remember when they – see, that area in South Minneapolis, just, let me just get this out real quick. Where Jonathan is sitting in front of Cup Foods on 38th and Chicago used to be Williams Pharmacy in the 70s, 60s and 70s. We used to walk from Portland and 38th down to 13th and 38th to go to Bancroft Elementary School, which was a K through 6 school. Okay,
because they closed Warrington.
Exactly. And then when we got not to junior high school, we went to that building that is now Sabathany, which was Bryant Junior High, which was a 7th and 8th grade, because the class of 78, 79, and 80 were huge. So what they did when we left there at 9th grade, they sent all the kids to Ramsey. Ramsey up on 50th and Nicollet was in 1978, I think it was, or 1977 or one of those years, was an all 9th grade. It was filled with 1,500 ninth graders that they divided between South High, Central and Washburn when they left Ramsey. And so they closed Central, that neighborhood went down. But getting back to M and Jonathan and our first starting out point, there's a huge economic wheel here that we are not accessing, that we, like M says, there's a blueprint that we need to access, that we need to make happen. And until we get to that point, we'll be out in the street yelling social justice this, social justice that, racism this, racism that. When racism, defined critically, is the obstruction of economic development, economic subsidence, economic justice. That means that they're taking the money from you, okay? If everybody not everyone's going to be on an equal plane, but if there was opportunity, which some people use the word diversity to describe opportunity, there will be a better chance of all of us getting what we need. What's that, M?
Well,
okay.
I was going to hop in. Like you said, when you think about racism, when you're trying to build a business, right, and you're not getting the business flowing, or that's when you feel like, hey, you guys are holding me back, or he's putting a glass ceiling on top of me. And, you know, I really honestly, if a person just called me the N-word for no reason, you're really not doing nothing but just showing yourself to who you are. It's not really going to affect me. I'm not going to cry, whatever the case may be. But I do know that if you don't call me the N-word, but you refuse me an auto loan, or you won't allow me to purchase a building, or you're hindering me from being able to economically grow or create generational wealth or help my community, that's when I say, hold on, that's racism, that's discrimination, or whatever the case may be. And I think that we have to shift our mindset. I hear a lot of these people, you know, from over north, and they're arguing about how long they've been a civil rights leader, whatever the case may be, and how many times they were beat up by the police, and now they're friends with the police, or they got family members that worked with the police, and they're trying to now change the narrative on things that we already know. We've already shifted our paradigm, our focus on hooting and hollering, to now actually put money in building wealth and now going back to the blueprint, was actually given up to us by conservative black people in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so when we see the historical pieces come back around, whether it's Black Wall Street, we have to go back into where we started progressing forward, and them saying, stop, hold on, let us give you integration. You guys beg us for everything, and then we don't accept you.
Yeah.
Now we have to change that focus into building businesses, changing legislation, boycotting certain things.
Exactly.
Making them feel the pressure on the capitalistic system.
I agree. Again, our phone lines are open at 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And we have that caller that is still there. Let me just check. Caller, your last four is 5103. Would you have a question or comment for Jonathan or I? Okay, maybe not. Wait.
Well,
okay.
You know, like, hey,
stand by.
Everybody, if you tune in, okay.
Caller, did you want to say something? Okay, that's it. Yeah, I'm sorry about that, Jonathan. They sounded like they were picking up the phone. Yeah, all this stuff that you're talking about, you know, the social justice piece, the other piece, you know, again, you know, when you define racism at its most critical point, it's the blockade or the blockage of economic development, economic subsidy, and it's the money. You know, people want to have a lifestyle that they dreamed of or try to get there.
The American dream.
It's layers and layers and layers of hard work. Okay, when I was a kid, I used to look at guys driving Mercedes and Cadillacs and going, wow, man, he's rich, you know. But I didn't know that the dude driving the Mercedes in my community, the black dude, was working 70, 80. Yeah, he was working 70, 80 hours a week, you know, and it was a lot of responsibility to build his lifestyle. If you don't get a chance in Minnesota to build your lifestyle, to build what you want to and can have access to through your rigor and your comprehension, that's a form of obstruction, i.e. racism. The social justice piece, again, if there's economic justice, social justice is canceled out because you create your own environment, basically. So if I'm a millionaire, if Jonathan's a millionaire, if Denise Mazzone, who's watching, is a millionaire, we're not going to be bothered with some petty stuff, right? Not at all.
Right.
Okay?
And a lot of that stuff, crime, that comes with poverty. So they know that. That's why they created ghettos and stuff like
that.
Right.
And poverty, you know, is man-made. You know, every city in the United States that has a substantial amount of anything that's darker than the shade of khaki, black people, Native Americans, Hispanic, Latinos, Asians, there are pockets that are man-made for housing, you know, the projects. Minneapolis and St. Paul don't really have projects, okay? We'll just put it like that. But they used to.
Right.
And those areas are created as a petri dish, more so in the 90s into the 2000s, for nonprofit funding. So if you have an agency that sits, let's just say North Minneapolis on Broadway. Let's say you have an agency there, hypothetical, right? And say that agency gets $50 million to be in a zone. And it's supposed to work with education for the kids. And you don't see an uptick. Now, I'm from the outside looking in. I'll admit that. But if you don't see an uptick in the environment, in the community, and the people, and the businesses, other than big developers coming in and building apartment buildings on the corner of Penn and Broadway and things like that, if you don't see the people flourishing, making money, and working. See, the problem in North Minneapolis and some of these other places where there is a substantial blight and poverty is the folks can't walk out of the house and get a job at the local business district strip like Broadway because most of those are mom and pop shops, fast food places. And if you go into a fast food place, usually there is adults working there that have to pay their responsibility. So,
and that's a major point you're making. When you look at the disparity, okay, not only in North Minneapolis, but just in the black community, and we're representative of 5 to 6% of the Minnesota population, the other part being white, 90%, and then, you know, you got give or take another, you know, 4%,
yeah,
you know, indigenous or whatever the case may be. When you look at these areas where there's highly populated black folks, you notice that in these areas, like you said, there's mom and pop shops, there's, you know, other ethnic communities that come in, they're gouging, price gouging, you can't get a job there, they're just employing their family. And then you look at the backdrop of it, they're in the prime area, the industrial area, the manufacturing area, that's gone, that has relocated to China.
Yeah.
What are we going to do for the black community? What is there for you guys right now to now gain wealth? And McDonald's isn't going to do it. Yaya's across the street from Foot Locker isn't going to do it. Foot Locker, Olympic Cafe isn't going to do it.
No.
Troy's Automotive ain't going to do it. So what you start to notice is that this is strategically done and through ignorance to our leaders within the black community, none of these things have changed. You know, there's no reason why if we're creating, license plates and stuff, and we have the prisoners who are actually, because, you know, the 13th Amendment is still around on the books.
Yeah.
So Stillwater, St. Cloud, and then they're exporting a lot of their work to the prisoners that are only making 10 cents an hour. And that's where on the benefit of the state can come in and go into some of these communities, you know, and provide some of these economic booms for these communities and then help them get out. And that's some of the mindset that we have to have as black leaders within the community. We can't allow Burger King to come in and now Burger King shut. Look, think about it. Right there in the prime of North Minneapolis, Burger King has been shut down. For how long?
Long time.
At least a long time, for a couple years almost now. And what are we going to do with that prime location? Because I know people were worried about the looting and the burning down of buildings. I really wasn't. But these things are going to get knocked down anyways. These high rises are going up anyways. And black people, if they don't know it, I'm tuning into All Black News because we're telling you this. The blue line's coming right down the blue Broadway. They're going to have light rail going through. They're going to have the high rises. Black folks will be pushed out to St. Cloud, Buffalo, everywhere else with minimal land, and the projects will be out in the suburbs.
Yep.
When I say suburbs, I'm talking about boondocks. You're not going out to Woodbury. You're not going out to Eagan. You're not going out to Lakeville because those are the next suburbs. Rogers, Princeton, they will police the hell out of the areas.
Yeah.
So you have to understand that you'll be going to Rochester's and other areas.
Yeah.
And that's where these plants like Genio and all these other manufacturing areas, the black folks will go out there, and then that's where they'll be. They'll get out of the city, and gentrification will be here. So it's time for us to put our minds together, guys.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Leadership roles in place so we can have people, kids, who can go to North High and go down to the business district and Broadway and go get a job after college where they're making $100,000 to $200,000 where they don't have to leave their neighborhood. They can now that taxpayer money can go back into the community and we can keep flourishing. But we have to talk about it.
You're absolutely right. And before we go back to the phone lines, I'd just like to say one thing. Back in 2007, 2008, 2009, there was a lady named Ellen Luger. She was the president of the General Mills Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my question, she used to have these meetings at a park in North Minneapolis every couple Fridays in the morning. And my question to General Mills is that you're in Golden Valley. Why not build a plant in North Minneapolis that makes the boxes, if it's feasible, the boxes, the bags, and the designs for your cereals and your products? Is that too tough to do? You know, and
3M.
Mm-hmm, yes.
You said it. 3M. McGill, Honeywell, all of these major General Mills, all of these major Minnesota staple, you guys can go out and build something for $150 million in affordable housing, and we can start building out, and we have to start getting these companies, like you said, reach out to these companies and hold them accountable. Say, you're too close for the North Side, you're in Golden Valley, you got to build something. If not, no tax breaks for you. We got to start, we got to put your feet to the fire.
Yep, and we have another caller here. It looks like Mr. Tucker is live on Our Black News. Mr. Tucker, good morning. How you doing, sir?
I think this is a long overdue conversation. Having been a econ major, I think that we have never fully understood that it's like, as Humphrey said, economics trumps philosophical ideals. I think that I'm not so concerned about other cultures as I am about the American black culture. I think what happens is that we have some want-to-be prominent Negroes, whatever the hell that is. In order to be a prominent Negro, the prerequisite is that you can't have any money. I mean, you must be broke to be a prominent Negro. I think what happens is that it's our own community that feels as though some of us are not worthy of being assisted in any way. I had this lady who was head of the Civil Rights Department in Minneapolis send somebody down and gave me a card and said, come and call me and we'll have a meeting. Being the person that I am, I told them to get away from me and don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't use those terms, but you know how I talk sometimes. I have met a lot of notables in my life, from Roy Wilkins to Ron Brown, to Fannie Lou Hamer, and several others that, all those notables. Ron Brown didn't come up to me and say, here's my card, call me. Okay? Roy Wilkins didn't say that. Barbara Jordan didn't say that. These wannabe consequential American black folks have some problems, and you got to clean up your own house first. They talk to us, but they talk to people about us. They talk to other people about us. They feel as though some of us who may be in the lower economic strata are not worthy of being talked to. We're worthy of that. I'm going to try to assist black people in North Minneapolis. And I said, how are you going to assist me? I told this guy called Gleason Glover and Ron Edwards back in the 70s in front of the Urban League. Look downtown. You see all those big buildings? We don't own none of them.
Not one.
And you don't know how the system works. CPAD right now, if you go in there and say you want to do a project, they will find some kind of way, if you got any chromium in your skin, any melanin in your skin, to find a way to not assist you. They come up with all these ideals, and no way of any of that money comes to black people. They look at all the so-called funds available to assist the black community, i.e. North Minneapolis. All that money went for people that are white people, let me just say it. None of that money, if you're a white person and you go in and ask for assistance to fix up your house, you will not get that. The money's gone. And you ask a white person, well, I called and they said there is money. It's those kinds of issues out there. They can keep you economically emasculated. I come to Minneapolis in 1970. I wasn't here 7 days before I recognized that black males in North Minneapolis, in the city of Minneapolis, were economically emasculated. If I can keep you broke, I can control you.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Tucker, Jonathan would like to ask you a quick question.
Go ahead.
As far as, if he's listening, as far as what he suggests we do now economically that will change the pendulum of us getting into those buildings and getting that asset and those capitals from those companies business owners?
I say go to the gun range, buy your gun, and learn how to shoot it. I'm seriously about that. I mean, some of those. I'm just being a little levity there. I think that we need to have some real serious conversation with some of those blacks who have spent a lot of time holding us down. You got this person called Jackie Cherry Holmes. I know a group of people wanted to put a restaurant on Broadway. Jackie Cherry Holmes said, we don't need another restaurant on Broadway. Me and her never got along, and I spoke in my normal terms with some expletives in there. Who in the hell are you to tell me what I don't need? Blonde Yang told us there was no legitimate blacks in North Minneapolis. I went off on him.
Mm-hmm.
They do not believe if you have somebody else calling the shots and those other blacks who think they can kowtow to the system, there's nothing upside happens to them. They go in and they get a little money. I call it kibbles and bits. And they just want to control. I think you have to start with our own community. Clean up our own backyard. For instance, in the 60s with the first riot, and I was in those riots, I seen people shot. I seen my friend Morris Jackson get shot down in the middle of the street by the police. I seen other friends hanging over storefronts dead. I seen the police shoot a person so many times that the velocity of the bullets kept him in the air. And when he finally hit the ground and his muscles moving, they shot him some more. You know, I've been there, seen that, done that. I'm not talking about what I read, what somebody told me. I was there. And I seen it. And the same thing happened when they had the meetings at the normal places, the churches, and some of us street blacks, as we called ourselves, as they called us, got in a meeting and they said, well, those are street blacks. And they don't mean nothing. Well, that lasted about 5 minutes. We took them outside and talked to them. When they came back inside, they didn't say that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
For a bunch of reasons. They had black eyes. That's why they didn't say it. You know.
I was going to touch on a couple of things. I was going to say.
All right.
So
thank you, sir.
Now that we're in this spot where we went from hooting and hollering kumbaya to now saying that we're going to be attacking your capital gains. We're going to be looking at who's owning the buildings, where we can fit in. If there's vacant places, why in the world can't we get a deal or allow you to get some profit along with you helping the community? Because if we do not go into these buildings, which, God, I'm going to give you my word, I will. And I will be going into these legislative branches on the 6th floor, and we will be putting bills together for $250-300 million and demanding that they do pass and putting people in place to have those things get passed so we can see the change that we want in America and our society to come to fruition. So I think that if we can have those conversations with other black leaders and get this message out that it's time to go to the business owners. It's time to go to these corporations like Cargill, 3M,
yeah.
Target,
General Mills. Yes, all of them.
General Mills, you gotta pay us now. It's time to pay us.
Yeah, and we do have another call. Okay, they hung up. Okay, never mind. They were there for a minute. It was outside of the state of Minnesota, but hopefully they'll call back. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904.
And real quick, Don.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, to all those who are tuning in, please share, like our page, Our Black News.
Yes.
Keep on hashtagging Our Black News, Minnesota Real News. Because this is what the future is going to hold for Minnesota when we're letting these people understand our next thought as far as what do we seek as change for our community?
I agree. Caller, last four is our 4644. You're live on iBlack News. Caller, last 4644. What's your question?
You tell about the economics up in Minnesota. Look at that African Development Center that Mr. Hassan started for the Somalis years ago. Of course, he's passed away now. But they're doing some tremendous things, although they have Sharia banking where they provide interest-free loans for home ownership and also business, too. But I was responding to a show that asked the question, should blacks have white allies? Well,
yes.
The question for me is yes, especially along the area of industry, you need to have them. If you're in the industry, I was in the industry of structure steel erection. I belong to Associated General Contractors. You have those that have similar interests in education that combine forces. Hispanics and blacks came together to go against Obama when he was trying to dismantle the D.C. Voucher Program Opportunity Act. So, when you have interests, you're going to combine with those. Look, you got black gun clubs, white gun clubs, and everybody in between that combine allied forces in order to fight for the Second Amendment when you got politicians that's trying to tear it down. And also, listen to this. The NAACP is against vouchers. Ain't that something?
Wow.
And that's
wow. So, Leslie Redmond from the NCAA CP want to call in. Please call in because I know she's watching probably. So we wonder why that is.
Yeah. See, the local caller, then you brought because you brought some important light. I know my uncle. He was one of the first major black electric contractors here in St. Paul or in the state of Minnesota. And at one of his birthday celebrations, he had this white guy sitting at his main table. And he stood up and he says, "This is my friend. He's been my friend for 50 years. And I couldn't get in some doors without him." It was his white ally.
Oh, absolutely. Right. That exists. But wonder why come you have a segment of black society that just seem to have a disdain for all whites rather than just the some that do. All whites is not bad. All police is not bad. And when George Floyd was restrained, at that point in time, he was supposed to be afforded due process as the 14th Amendment state. Now, anything before that, all bets are off. So I like your program because your program centers around economics. Another thing, when you seek donations from corporations, white-owned, especially publicly traded corporations, they're going to want to have a member on your board to make sure that those funds that they are contributing and donating is being utilized in the best interest of both interests, and that is to help somebody.
Yes.
Right.
I agree 100%.
And that's a major point because what we've seen for so long as people who get these grants from our government with no oversight who get $100,000 and they go pay director fees $95,000 to top two people. Spend $5,000 on chips and hot dogs and then go have one event and say we change the community.
Yeah.
And them days are long gone. And like you said, the allyship between whites and blacks, we're all human, so we have to get away from them. White supremacy way of thinking, just like colorism. There's people who are mad at me for speaking out, and they're black folks, but we understand that there's house Negroes, field Negroes, and sometimes I feel like I'm more of a field Negro than most of these other people out here.
Yay!
Especially those who won't go for vouchers and won't fight for our Second Amendment rights, because we have to understand that our similarities with our allies, whether they're Latino, white, or whatever the case may be, will bring us together as humans, and we can fight for a greater cause. So I'm so glad you mentioned that, brother, because we do need white allies. We need white conservative men. We need white conservative women and liberal women, white women and men. But we have to hold you guys accountable, and we can work with you together to increase our generational wealth and our society as a whole.
I agree. And callers, don't hang up because I'm getting ready to drop a bomb. And I need y'all to respond to this. This shows you how messed up Minnesota is. Within the black community in Minnesota has some really terrible organizational health. If an organization is not healthy, it cannot move forward. Okay? I don't care if it's a business or it's a group of black people. But
right.
I put the poster of the four officers involved in George Floyd's death on the program show page for this episode for this show. If you look carefully, there is one black officer up there. Okay? Look carefully. Look carefully. There's one black officer up there. We have not heard a damn thing from any of the black leadership, not even from Chief Rondo, about this black officer. We're letting the mainstream media and our chants out on the street, social justice, no one's reading the transcripts. And I'm not trying to give these guys a bunch of empathy, because if one of the officers would have rushed Derek Chauvin and knocked him off Floyd, they would have lost their job that day.
Right.
Okay?
And you're right.
It happened in Brooklyn. It happened in Brooklyn when a woman, you had a black female officer that stepped in when a white male officer was abusing a suspect. And he smacked her, and she lost her job and lost her pension. It's still there today. Nobody's coming to her help. Wait a minute. Hang on real quick. She done what people are saying those four were supposed to do, and nobody comes to her help.
Yeah. Not the NAACP, not the Urban League, nobody. You know, because it's not a sound bite on MSNBC. You know, I'm looking at a lot of black academics and a lot of black leaders. You know, I for a long time, I didn't really agree with Al Sharpton. But after I saw him do the eulogy, I'm good with Al Sharpton.
Man,
yeah.
Hey, look, Josh. You hit it all. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I was not a fan of Al Sharpton till I heard him at the memorial, because you know I was at the memorial.
Yeah.
I could not believe it. And I actually like him. He's changed the pendulum. He's maybe advanced from some of his ways. But like you said, it's not a mainstream soundbite, right? But as black folks, we know that we hold each other also accountable. So good in the hood, they might not even call the police. They might just kill you. And if the police come, they're going to arrest you. You're going to go, and then the jury's going to convict you. It works so good for us. But like you said, if that black brother, which we want him in jail too, and people are, well, this is his fourth day on the job, but he took an oath to serve and protect. And you're right. It was our system so messed up. Derek, if he would have knocked Derek off the guy, off George, he would have been locked up. And like that black woman, she lost the job. The guy's still here. And this is what we're fighting against, Don. It's almost psychological warfare.
It's complex. Caller, before our time's up, would you like to add a last comment here before we
I
move on?
I want to add another thing, too. And it has to go against the people of these communities, because there's 18,000 police departments across the country, and they are not a national police department ran by the federal government. They are individual police department, which in your state capitals and your state constitution, your state statute, it says this in Missouri, that the people of this state have the inherent, sole, and exclusive right to regulate the internal government and police thereof. So when do people of these communities hold their employees accountable? We ain't talking about sheriff department, because sheriff department is over the police. Sheriff departments are elected. But those are employees that you pay wage, salary, and guess what? When something goes wrong, you pay the settlement too.
Yes.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
You're right.
Well, thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's really for the people, by the people. Remember that our country was made for the people, by the people.
Yes.
Remember, our taxpayer dollars paid for them. So it's okay to hold them accountable. The problem is, if you use your Second Amendment right, okay, for example, We know good and well Derek Chauvin was breaking the law.
Yes.
Okay? And we have a constitutional right, which is the second one. You know, you can scream and holler for our first one, but you really trying to stop some danger, something real hard, you use that second one and go boom, 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 drop them. Now, the problem is if you drop them, you're probably going to drop your whole life and you're going to go to jail, or the police that are responding to him getting boom, 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 and you protected George now, George is now alive, they're going to say now you're in trouble and you're going to go to jail. So people don't even want to use their Second Amendment right. But you do see, though, this is the hypocrisy of it all.
Yeah, and I agree. And I'm sorry.
Only a couple minutes left.
No, go ahead. You're fine.
Well, I was going to say the hypocrisy of it all, and this is where I think the government, like Tim Walz and everybody, is scared. Remember when we had the COVID-19 protests from the conservative right party, and they said, you know what, we will use our Second Amendment right that can keep us home, and we will fire upon you, and we'll use it. And so they said it. I seen the signs. I seen the big gun. And guess what? There was no police around. They stopped. They were giving them high fives. And so what you realize is our constitutional rights, be it that we do hoot and holler and stuff like that, we have to start going into the phases of these constitutional rights, which is after hooting and hollering, we get our second right to bear arms and everybody walk in the building strapped up. And we're saying we demand change then.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it's going to – it might have to go that way, you know, because
– and it's going that way. Whether I say it, you say it, our Black News, Mornings with Mason says it, it's coming that way.
Yeah,
going that way.
And we need to flip all these current elected officials. I don't care who you are, Republican or Democrat. You know, I would like to see the Minnesota House of Representatives totally flipped.
Yeah.
And I would like to see majority conservative. Because we've seen what majority liberal have done over these years. And
yeah.
I would like to see the Senate. I would like to see some of those folks that's been there a really long time that haven't done much gone. The St. Paul, Minneapolis City Council, you know, I mean, these guys, for some of the people that sit on the Minneapolis City Council, this is their first job in life. First real job in life.
And you know what, Don? And that's the point where, you know, and I don't care if you're Black, white, gay, trans, whatever the case may be, I'm going to hold your butt to the fire. And so we got to start saying their names. It's people like Felipe Cunningham.
Oops.
It is Jeremiah Ellison. It is
when
Andreas.
We hear about.
Jordan, Kano, you know, all of them.
Yeah, they're just.
Do we have
No, I thought we did. That was something going on in the background. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, these folks, they don't have any salt on them. And then you have a lot of people that are running for office right now that are doing it for stardom, celebrityship. They're not doing it because they're, oh, that would be a good job to have. Let me get out here. I mean, it's hard work, but you're not doing it for the right reasons because you haven't read anything. You know,
you have and everything that we're telling you, it's like, for example, these same woke folks, remember this, and this is what I will never I will remember this, and I will hold their butt to the fire to this if they haven't answered yet, whether it's Jeremiah Ellison, Felipe Cunningham, I'm talking to the Black folks, Andrea Jenkins, they gave Justine DeMond family, okay, the same people, $20 million willing to empty it out for a family, okay? But these are the same woke folks, listen to me, the same woke folks that are just, we love you guys for the kidney, gave Jamar Clark's family only $200,000. So these people, whether they are gay, bisexual, trans, or whatever the case may be, and you got in and the people of Minnesota put you in because you got a little color,
yes.
We're not going to allow this garbage to keep happening because what we're seeing is you're still not doing what's best for the community.
No,
even
not at all.
In these positions. Nope,
you're,
not at all.
You're absolutely right. Well, with 1 minute left of the show, we'd like to thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Don. Oh, that's me. Thank our listeners and people who watch this on Facebook Live. You've been watching the I was going to say the Ron and Don show, but you've been watching the Don and John show live with Our Black News. via Blog Talk Radio. And we're going to close it out here with some James Brown, because we are black and we're proud.
All right, don't talk.